Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Go ahead. Make my day.
The 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Hi, this is Chuck Woolery with Mark Young, and this is Blunt Force Truth.
Hey, Chuck, we have, I'm just really excited about this guest. This is going to be a great hour. We have John Lott Jr., and John is, just in my opinion, probably the leading authority on Second Amendment and gun rights and the statistics and the truth about handgun and handgun ownership. He's amazing. He's been at these head positions at the University of Chicago, Yale University, Stanford, UCLA. Can't imagine how that went. Warren and Rice. John is with the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's written hundreds of articles, several books, which I happen to have. Both the Biased Against Guns and More Guns, Less Crime are just brilliant pieces of work. He is a PhD in economics, and that's, I think, why he's so awesome, because he approaches this, I'm excited to talk to him. I believe he's probably approaching the entire gun issue, probably using mathematics and not emotion. So anyways, John, welcome to the show. We're really happy to have you here.
You're welcome, John.
Thanks very much for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, UCLA, 30 years ago, used to have probably one of the couple most conservative economics departments in the country. That's no longer the case, but at least for a little while, the econ department used to be kind of an island there at the university.
Why do you think that is, John? That's an interesting perspective, because I didn't know that. I lived in Los Angeles 30 years ago, but I didn't know that. Why do you think it's changed?
Well, I think there's a tendency for departments to become, like everything else, regress to the mean. And, you know, if they're all the other departments are pretty liberal, then, you have to hire graduate students from those other departments. And I think there's just a tendency for outliers to kind of get back in line over a long enough time.
Plus, you see that ever changing and reversing itself?
Unfortunately, it's just continued to get worse. I mean, economics departments, compared to the rest of the university, generally are relatively conservative, but that basically means that maybe 60% of the econ faculty are Democrats. I've taught in econ departments, business schools, law schools. In law schools, there was a survey about a decade ago that indicated that 93% of the faculty were registered as Democrats for the top 100 law schools. And 4% were registered as Republicans. But even that kind of understates the imbalance, because in order to get tenure, you have to have a supermajority of votes. So a Democrat who's outspoken, they can alienate a number of Democratic faculty members as being too extreme and still get tenure. But a Republican who comes up for tenure has to either be the type of person who keeps their views to themselves or just doesn't really care very much about the issues, because even if they get all the Republicans, the 4%, they have to get the majority of Democrats to think that they're not too extreme on things.
You just described my entire life and experience in Los Angeles for 42 years. Thank you, John.
Right. Well, I can't tell you the number of faculty lunches that I would be at, and I would have we'd be at like Chicago, and we'd be at the faculty roundtable, which would hold like 14 people. And I'd be arguing against 4 or 5 different people. And when we'd be walking back to the our building, one of the faculty members would kind of nudge me and say, "Boy, I'm really glad you were making those arguments." And I would turn to him. I said, "Where were you?" You know, it's just,
yeah, right.
Because
I was the guy hiding in the corner. That's where I was.
So, but it's just people have strong views about these things. They get upset, and so you don't want to do things that get people too upset with you. And I understand that. But the unique thing about the old UCLA economics department was that even though it was very conservative, it had a diversity of views, really lively debates. But, and that's the way I thought academia was, that, you know, people enjoyed the process of the debates. But unfortunately, the vast majority of places that I've been at, most faculty like to have people who have the same views that they do. And it's not just in terms of faculty or hiring. It also is in terms of admissions. I was on admissions at Wharton for 2 years, and
Describe what Wharton is for our audience, because a lot of them may not know.
Wharton is a business school. It's at the University of Pennsylvania. I guess depending upon what rankings, you know, it could be one or in the top few business schools in the world. But I was on admissions, and you know, and I've seen this at other places. There's a real discrimination against students who are applying that indicate that they may be conservatives. And there are lots of proxies that are used to kind of flag whether, you know, someone's conservative or not. So
like Milton Friedman instead of John Keynes.
Right. Well, yeah, something like that. But it's more subtle in lots of different ways. So, for example, I'll give you an example in terms of hiring, but it's similar. When I was at Wharton, we tried to hire Glenn Lowry from he was at the Kennedy School at Harvard at the time. And he's kind of a moderate to liberal at the time, black economist. But he was nowhere as liberal as a lot of the faculty were. And the black faculty at University of Pennsylvania just went ballistic because they were saying, you know, he didn't have the proper views. He couldn't be qualified as a black faculty member. That if we hired him, he couldn't count towards being a black faculty member.
Wow, you know, that's amazing.
There was a letter. But the thing is, race was... they use race as a proxy for political views. But when somebody doesn't have those views, then they don't want to use race anymore.
Right. It makes sense. The left, that's how they operate, and that's how they've always operated, and that's how they'll probably always operate in the future. You said something interesting, John, and that is you talked about a Democrat. I know we're not on guns yet, and we're going to get there, folks. Believe me, we're going to get to guns.
Yeah, sorry.
And the Second Amendment. But I kind of started this ball rolling. So let me finish with this, because this is a question. Do you, in your experience dealing with faculties and admissions and everything, do people understand the difference between a Democrat and a progressive Democrat? Do they really get that? It's not a subtle difference, but it is if you don't know what it is.
Right. Well, you know,
are all Democrats progressive at this point?
Well, in academia, they pretty much are.
They're all progressive. So we can describe them as all being progressives.
Right. You know, they're not. Okay. It used to be up until, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, you'd have, or maybe a little bit longer, you'd have still some people around, old line Democrats who had maybe gotten tenure kind of right before the Vietnam War era, maybe 15 years ago. And those guys were kind of more reasonable types, but they've all gone, you know, died off, retired.
We've all gone back to the future. We've all gone back to 1914. I mean, it's amazing. The whole political perspective from the Democratic Party has literally pretty much gone back to 1914 progressives. And most people have no clue what that is. But I digress. You know, I kind of got you off track on this whole thing. So let me get you back on track. Let's talk about the Second Amendment and how it affects our lives and what's happening and why it's under assault. And, you know, Mark, if you have a specific question, why don't you get to it and let's get this ball rolling.
So first, I want to just ask you this. You said that a survey showed that 4% of the faculty were Republican.
Right. I got a feeling we're not going to get away from this question, but okay. Yeah, right. Right.
What was the margin of error on the survey?
Right. Well, I mean, basically it was more of a census than a survey.
Oh, okay.
And so,
I'm just hearing that. I'm like 4 out of 100. I'm thinking that's like a rounding error.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for example, they could only identify one Republican female faculty member in the top 100 law schools.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
So, John, the first question I'll jump in and ask you a question. You take a lot of heat for a lot of the work you do. And if I understand your work, this is a lot like, our guys over at Freakonomics. You're not making opinion. You're taking mathematical facts. You know, are you not just using the basis of economics as a way of measuring a social issue?
Yeah, look, I mean, I've been involved in crime for a long time. I was chief economist at the U.S. Sentencing Commission in Washington during the late 80s. I taught classes on crime over the years. I've done a lot of academic research on a lot of different crime issues, mainly corporate and white-collar crime. But I've never really been interested in the gun issue. I was teaching class on crime at Wharton, and I guess I made the mistake of telling the students that we were a little bit ahead in the syllabus. And some students came up and asked me after class if I could talk about gun control a little bit. And, you know, I'd read some of the papers in the area. I had not been impressed, but I kind of assumed that there were other good papers out there. And but if I was going to talk about it, it kind of forced me to look through the literature more systematically. So I said, okay, you know, I'll try to put something together. None of the previous studies had tried to control for any type of impact that law enforcement would have on crime rates. And I could go on for hours telling you about the problems. And there's two reasons why academics do research. Either one, you have a new idea that nobody's thought about, and that's virtually always what I do. And the second thing is you think you can do a better job than people have done before. And so I started working on it. It took a few years because basically the way I would do something like that is to get all the data that's available for all the counties, for all the years in the United States, get the state level, the city level data, you know, and look at it lots of different ways. You know, if somebody... Let's say you flip a coin 20 times and you get 10 heads and 10 tails. If I let somebody go and pick 5 heads, you know, they could say, well, look, that's an unfair coin, but you know it's not. And so whenever anybody kind of uses only a portion of the data, unless they have a really good excuse for why they're doing it, really good explanation, which is pretty hard usually to come up with, you know, it's the smell tests kind of go off. And,
Let me interrupt you just a moment. So do you believe that this previous kind of study on guns was maliciously done by other people in a way that academically it wouldn't stand up, but for television and radio and newsprint, you could kind of get the conclusions you wanted, or you know what I'm trying to say?
Well,
that it's just the fix was in?
A lot of these studies were academic studies, you know, but the one that I mentioned before, they had 31 counties, you know, it had like one county in Mississippi and a county in Oregon and a couple counties in some other state, you know, and add them up. You see something like that. And, you know, academics, as we were just talking about at the beginning, have strong views on lots of things, and they're not always as critical of things that kind of meet their views.
When you saw this on counties, do you feel like they were cherry picked, these counties?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, sure. I mean,
okay.
You know, if you read a paper and they pick just a few counties or they pick one state. Yeah, I'll give you an example. There was one study last year that got a huge amount of national and international attention that looked at licensing for buying handguns in Missouri. And it claimed that after the licensing rules were ended in 2007, murder rates went up in Missouri. Well, you know, the thing is, you have other states, other places in the country that have had similar types of rules. And not only that, but Missouri instituted the rules in like 1981. And so why would you only look at the period of time for one place where the rules were removed? And you look at it, and I know the data. I could pull it up and look at it pretty quickly. And what you found was that there's a reason why they didn't include any of those others, because all the other ones went in the opposite direction. And beyond that, it's true that murder rates in Missouri rose relative to the rest of the United States after the 2007 period, but they were rising at twice the rate relative to the United States in the same period of time immediately before the rule was removed.
So in essence, it may have ramped it down.
Yeah, it actually slowed the rate of increase relative to the rest of the United States was cut in half in the 5 years after compared to the 5 years before. And, you look at those types of things and you say, come on, guys. If you're going to look at one state, you better explain why one state and why only if you're going to look at that one state, why not go back to 1981 and look at it when it was instituted? Because if you're claiming that getting rid of these rules were responsible for an increase in murder, well, presumably then, if you looked at it to begin with, you would have seen a drop in murder then.
You know, I have a question for you, John, and that is, you've collected all this information. You've obviously done the work in the trenches for years, looking at statistics and outcomes and all of this kind of stuff. Obviously, there are people on the right who agree with you, but they probably agreed with you before. Are you ever able to convince anyone on the left with the figures and the outcomes that the conclusions you've come to? Have you ever been able to change their mind and change their course on how they're feeling about the Second Amendment and gun rights?
I think there have been a number of people who've changed. I mean, you just look at the academic literature on concealed carry, for example. Prior to my research in the mid-90s, there weren't many papers, but there were a few papers. You know, this one I was mentioning with 31 counties would be one of them. There'd be some other ones there, these small studies, and they were basically arguing that concealed carry was bad. But you look at kind of the modern literature that got started after my research, where I basically said, look, you guys, you have to look at all the data. You can't cherry pick this stuff. And you have to have some basic controls in here. And you look at the literature afterwards, and there have been, you know, almost 40 academic papers have been published in refereed journals. About 70% of those claim to find a benefit from concealed carry. And about 30% say that there's no impact on murder, rape, or robbery. And
so So whose minds are these facts changing? Are they changing political minds? Because I still hear the same rhetoric coming from the left. They don't seem to be adopting any of this information and using it for a positive.
Yeah, well, the issue here is the truth isn't fitting the narrative.
Right. Well, no, what? Look, I think it's had some impact in academia. Academia's views. I mean, there's so many debates in academia. Almost all of them have some people find one thing, other people find the exact opposite. It's relatively unique now that we're in a debate where the issue is most people find a benefit and some say there's no effect. So the question then is basically how big of a benefit, not whether there's costs and benefits that are there. And so that's a big change. But look, if you go to our website, crimeresearch.org, what you'll see is there's some recent polls that have come out by Gallup and by Pew, and it's really amazing to see how people's views have changed on guns over the last decade or so.
Wait, let me stop you right there for just a second, John, because have people's views really changed, or are people just feeling more free to speak openly about what they felt all along?
But the changes have been dramatic. So I think there has been some change in view.
Okay.
So for example, you look at a Gallup survey. They get asked this. They ask the question: do guns make homes safer? And you could either say a gun in the home makes it safer or more dangerous. And in 2000, you had 35% of Americans said that having a gun in the home made it safer. In 2014, it had gone up to 63%.
That's huge.
That's a huge change. or you look at a Pew survey, they haven't over as long a period of time. It's only been over about 4 years, but over that period of time, where they ask people, do own a gun in general, and so this would include carrying, protect people from crime or put them at risk. And that, obviously a much shorter period of time, has gone from about 48% saying that it protects people and makes them safer more to about 57%. And if you look over the last 15, 16 years or so, and the questions that are asked about, do you support more gun control or the same, no change or less? This is the first time over that period of time, just this last year, where the majority of Americans say they do not want more gun control. And that's changed fairly dramatically in all these surveys over the last 15 plus years. So
I've had go ahead.
So you still have a lot of people, obviously, who have strong views. And obviously, you hear even maybe more about it because you have a huge amount of money being put in. Bloomberg is spending $50 million a year. You have George Soros putting in, you know, $20 million one year, so much the next year. You have President Obama using federal funds to push this. But you have, in 2013, President Obama got 23 large foundations that had been involved in the healthcare debate. He basically said, look, we've won the healthcare debate. Obamacare is the law of the land. You should focus on another issue. And what he got them to do was to pledge that they were going to focus on gun control issues.
John, don't you have, I think you have some statistics or some work that talk about the bias in the media itself, right? So, I mean, there's all kinds of cases where people with legal handguns are protecting themselves and preventing crime. But the only thing we see on TV is, you know, the kid got the gun out of mom's purse.
Right. Well, yeah, I just had a piece at Fox News on that case you're talking about from Idaho, the tragedy that was there. That's where that 2-year-old accidentally firing the gun and killing the mom. That's the only case remotely similar to that that I know of. You know, we have like 12 million concealed carry permit holders right now in the United States. These laws have been in effect in some states since the 1920s. And the article that I wrote at Fox, I said, look, just the day before this tragedy in Idaho, you had two dramatic cases where permit holders had saved lives. You had one case in Florida where a pastor who had a concealed carry permit stopped a mass shooting at his church. It was a crowded church, lots of people there, and the pastor was able to pull out his gun and wound somebody who was going on a rampage there. Nobody else was hurt. If presumably the attacker there had killed anybody, any victims, surely would have gotten national news coverage, but because the pastor had stopped it before anybody could get hurt, it got nothing outside of local media.
Now, is that statistically what happens with legal weapons, that they prevent the crime more than they have to shoot the attacker?
Oh, yeah. No, sure. Let me just give you one other example first before I get to that question. That same day in Fargo, North Dakota, you had four people who were beating up a 36-year-old businessman, apparently, who had money on him. They had beaten him into unconsciousness and were still beating him when a permit holder from across the street saw what was happening, came over, brandished his gun. The attackers ran away. The person who was being attacked apparently was still in a coma for several days. Only got local news coverage. But look, I wrote a book, as you know, The Bias Against Guns, that you mentioned before, this came out in 2003. I was looking at media coverage over the few years before that. But one thing I had done was I had gone through all the news reports during 2001 on all the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and I could not find one story over that entire year on any of those networks of someone using a gun defensively to protect themselves or protect somebody else.
And that's the point. There's a bias in the media, a left bias in the media that is preventing people from hearing the positive stories.
Right. Well, look,
let me tell you something. Let me tell you something about, I've had an experience in the street. I was just in Los Angeles. I knew several single women out there. And here's something that happened that I was surprised at. Every one of them is a liberal. They all voted for Obama en masse. Here is the kind of string that held them together. They all wanted to learn to shoot. They were all afraid, and they were all single women at home, and right. They all wanted a gun and wanted to know how to use one. And I have one coming to Texas to learn in about a month to do nothing but shoot while she's here to prepare her to take care of herself because she's afraid.
Well,
so
they better
this
move
is
out
happening.
Of California because that's
well,
not a very gun-friendly state.
Yeah. But right, that's well, I just thought I'd interject that as a street thing.
If you know, anybody reads my books, one of the things they'll see is that I believe there are two groups of people who benefit by far the most from owning guns, and that tends to be people, women, and people relatively weaker physically, like the elderly. You know, you're almost always talking about a male doing the attacking. When you're talking about a female victim and a male attacker, there's a large strength differential there, much larger than a male attacking a male on average. And the presence of a gun for a woman represents a much bigger change in her ability to go and resist an attack than it does for a man. I mean, there's no
it's
doubt.
It's why it's called the equalizer.
Exactly. The other group of people that I find who benefit the most are those who are most likely to be victims of violent crime. And that overwhelmingly, unfortunately, tends to be one group in our society. So that's poor blacks who live in high crime urban areas. And, you know, one of the things that upsets me a lot about the gun control debate is how, whether it's Bloomberg or others, I have come, unfortunately, to believe that one of the main things that they're pushing is just to make it costly for people to go and buy guns. I'll give you one example. In 2013, when Colorado was passing its gun control laws, I was in conversation talking to some Republican state legislators in the state, and actually gone out and done a debate for them and some other things. But one of the things that was suggested was to put up an amendment when they were voting on the bills there at the time that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax that they were imposing on the transfer of guns. And, you know, except for two pro-gun Democrats in the state House, every single one of the Democrats in the state assembly there voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay that tax. And, you know, in Maryland, that same year where they just imposed a $300 fee to license and register and get the required training for owning a handgun in the state there, the Republicans in the state legislature tried to put up amendments that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay those fees. And again, in that case, the Democrats in the state legislature wouldn't even allow, because they controlled 2/3 of the seats in both houses, wouldn't even allow a vote on that amendment.
What is the